Coming through, sir.
Pursuant to paragraph 1290, I hereby formally request third-party arbitration of our dispute.
You have the right.
Furthermore, pursuant to subsection D3, I name the Grisellas to arbitrate.
It is April 25th, 2024. I am Matt coming from a undisclosed location because anyone who needs to know where I'm at can tell because they can just use an illegal or unconstitutional search warrant to find out. That's our topic today. I'm a little pissed, Steve.
Well, I'm Steve in Southern Bedford County where you could just search my name on the internet and find me everywhere. Thanks to social media and all the other garbage that's out there. And more importantly, I'm looking forward to my new dog.
Okay. You teased this to me before we started recording. So what's the story on the new dog? Because you have two now, right?
Three. Yeah, they're small. You know, Duke, my wife's golden, is 95 pounds. And then we have the other
8-year-old, but go ahead.
Yeah, he's eight.
No. I mean the size of a human being, 8-year-old.
Yeah, and he happens to be 8 years old too. Yeah. And then we have Brody, our golden doodle, which is a mix between a poodle and a golden. He's small. He's 84 pounds. And then we have Samson, who is a cross between a black shepherd and a golden retriever. He's 2 years old in July, and he's 150 pounds. And those
please
are
tell
all...
me you're getting like a wiener dog.
Well, I'm getting along the lines of a more slimmed down dog. I ran into a lady who breeds Dobermans, and who I've known for years. I did appraisals for her years ago, and we got to chatting, and she said that she had gotten in a new. I'll use the term dame for a female. In the horse breeding world, we call the female a dame. So, and then the male is a sire. So, she has a new dame. It's a European Doberman, and usually female Dobermans are smaller. Like my Duchess that I had who died of bone cancer was 66 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
She was perfect weight. And, her Doberman from Europe, female, is 100 pounds.
Oh, geez.
And she's breeding with another European Doberman. So she's figuring that she's going to be a minimum of 100 pounds. So I'm saying that's going to be my dog. So we'll have four.
You know they make animals Doberman. That are smaller than that, right?
Yeah. And
big
my dogs, call
dogs
those...
horses, like, you know, big.
Yeah.
You could buy a bird.
Yeah, but my dogs call anything under 50 pounds a chew toy. So,
oh yeah, you're kind of stuck in the life now.
Yeah. Well, I have two 2,000 pound horses, So
what I'm saying, you don't have anything that's small.
No, nothing. Yeah, the smallest animal I have is a miniature donkey, and that weighs 400 pounds. So yeah, we don't. Small is not something we do around here. Not on this farm. So, yeah, but a Doberman.
Jeez,
sweet. Yeah, my last one could run 32 miles an hour.
She ran like the wind.
Oh, she was gorgeous. Yeah.
I've seen that dog run. That dog could run.
Yeah, so this one, he's
and
he's
despite
a male.
The connotation, by the way, of the breed name, that dog was fun.
Oh, she was a sweetheart. Well, and it's
no
all
issues whatsoever,
yeah. So this one's going to be a male. I'm figuring he's going to be at least 100 pounds, and his name is going to be Tiberius. It's just a name that I like.
Nice.
And not something you hear for a dog normally. What's your dog's name? Tiberius. Let's call him Ty for short, but cool name. Anyway. Yeah. So September, she said she had her bred and everything was successful. So September, I will be picking up my new puppy.
Tiberius. Jeez, oh man.
Tiberius. Yeah.
Anyway. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, had a good week?
Yeah, I'm tired.
Yeah. It's been a long week for you with finals and all that stuff.
It's been a long couple of weeks, and the weather's killing me up here. It's cold. It's rainy. It's which I've reached that point where I didn't reach that point. I would be, especially being as sick as I was, as much as I love the cold, I can't do it anymore. Just yeah. Knocks me.
Body's
out.
Changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your body's changed.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
But next week's supposed to be 80. So yay. Frost yeah, warning 80. Tomorrow morning, 80 degrees next right. week.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. We're supposed to be, well, it's cool tonight, not frosting, but yeah, 83 on Sunday, 86 on Monday.
Yeah. We don't have a climate change problem. We have a Mother Nature's on crack problem.
Yeah. Schizophrenic.
Yeah, yeah. There you go.
Schizophrenic.
Dump some Valium in the ocean. There you go.
Yeah. No kidding.
So we've had a busy couple of weeks or a week or two watching stupidity coming out of DC. I told you I was going to rant a little bit about the hypocrisy of some of the stuff that has happened because I'm annoyed. As a constitutional fan, this is annoying as all get out.
Yeah. And having been a defender of the Constitution with my life for 22 years, I'm not a fan of anybody treading all over it. But then again, that's Washington, D.C. The Constitution is just a piece of paper to them.
Yeah.
Not guidelines. Well, I'll let you go first. I will bow to your angst over FISA and let you vent. And then I'll talk about Boeing.
So, no, you know what? Let's do it actually the other way around. Because your Boeing boots on the ground is more of a self-contained thing. And then we can have a longer rant about... stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, all yeah. Because right. I don't have much, I have an opinion on Boeing, but I don't have knowledge like you're going to have knowledge.
Ah, okay. All right. So, you know, obviously Boeing has been in the news a lot lately, you know, and there's all kinds of, depending on which one of the M5M you listen to or watch or which podcast you go on to, there's lots of theories about what's going on with Boeing. You know, parts falling off of it, doors blowing out, all kinds of different things. So I was in West Virginia last week, and I had the chance to sit down with a guy who has 45 years in the aviation industry, started in 1979. Started out as a technician or wrench turners, as we used to call them, fixing the aircraft.
Okay.
Worked his way up, he was in the Navy, became an officer, started flying the sub hunters. They used to be the P3s were the old version of the sub hunters. And I don't know what the new ones are because those are the old propeller turboprop ones.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, and then retired after 20 years and then did 25 more years in the government service side / private industry side, working with the government, servicing the aircraft, maintaining them, you know, writing papers on, you know, changes of policy, you know, all that stuff and everything. And so I said, well, did you ever work with Boeing? And he kind of chuckled. He said, yeah. He said, I've been working either worked on a Boeing aircraft or working with Boeing, especially since I retired as a government service worker and then as a private contractor with Boeing for years.
Okay.
And I said, well, they're all over the news. He goes, yeah. He says, yeah, it's all over the news. And I said, what? So what's your opinion? I said, you have 45 years. I said, that's longer than what a lot of these knuckleheads who are giving their opinions have even been alive. And I said, what have you seen? He said, well, he said, when I first started out in the late 70s and throughout the 80s and into the early 90s, he said, the people that ran Boeing, the upper management, middle and upper management, all those people were the engineers and the technicians who had worked their way up through the ranks and had worked their way up into management and upper level management and the C-level positions. They were all engineers and their focus was on quality of the product. They didn't necessarily have a focus on financial side, just build a good quality product, because no matter how pretty those clouds happen to be, when an aircraft breaks, you can't park them on a cloud.
Yeah, the aircraft it's gonna.
The aircraft will continue downward until it impacts something hard.
Yes.
So But so the engineers and the technicians who had came up through the ranks who ran Boeing were very focused on quality. No matter what the cost, make sure you have a quality product because literally lives depend upon us making good quality aircraft.
Yeah, as
He
George
said,
Carlin would say, those unscheduled cornfield and housing development stops. That's the
yeah,
problem
absolutely.
if you don't
Yeah,
have quality.
those are the problem. You don't have
Okay,
quality.
I follow so far.
He said the last 20 years that he was in, he noticed a change beginning. So he said, so the culture of Boeing was quality over quantity and over financial gain. It was build a good product because it's flying through the air and it needs to be reliable. He said, but for the past 20 years, right up till he retired, and he just retired this year. So this is not I retired 10 years ago. This is he retired in literally January 1st was his last, his
So
first
5 months
retirement.
at most,
5 months. Yeah. So this is
as
very,
of
very
leaving.
fresh information. Yep. So he said he noticed a cultural shift starting in Boeing back in the late 90s, early 2000s, is that the focus started to get on to more of a fi the financial side than the quality side. And throughout all this time, and they being the people who are actually working on the aircraft or building the aircraft or building the parts and everything, started sending memos to upper management saying, hey, while these parts are meeting standards, they're not meeting the standards that we're used to having. They're meeting engineering standards for how we're supposed to build a part, but they're not meeting the higher end of the engineering standards.
Yeah,
They're
there's a
meeting minimal standards.
floor, or there's a minimum basic safety level, and then there's what they were doing, which was much above.
Right.
And now they're not at,
So
they're at that second, that floor.
they're beginning to come down. And like my son-in-law, who is a engineer who graduated from Penn State, we were talking about that one time, and I made a joke about this is not recent. I made a joke about, well, it's not a problem. I can push it because the engineers always build in more than what they say it can take.
Yeah.
And he laughed and he goes, well, he says, hey, look,
That's good Star Trek
maybe,
engineering.
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely good Star Trek. He said, back in your day when you were in your 20s, 30s, and 40s, yes, not anymore. He said, they don't build it. They don't build it with, he said, what you would call a slush
A
factor.
buffer
They
or something, yeah.
build it. They build it to the minimum standards, push the product out. And I laughed and I said, well, that's stupid because everything should have a safety factor built into it. And we were just talking about cars. Anyway, back to Boeing. So he said, so through the 2000s, he said more and more letters, memos, what do you want to call it, emails, kept getting sent up from the floor or the factory floors and the engineers to upper management saying, we got a problem. We're meeting minimal standards, but this is not the quality that Boeing is known for. And it kept coming back down from upper management. Are you meeting minimum standards? Hit minimum standards. And what had happened is there was a cultural change within Boeing. Now, I did some reading and I found out that Boeing merged, and I went to Wikipedia, which is a joke most times, but in this one, it seems to be corroborating what I've come up with. Boeing merged with McDonnell Douglas in 1997.
Yeah, that sounds right. I know they had merged.
Yeah, I'm literally looking right at the
Yeah. Oh,
Wikipedia
okay, good.
page. They merged in 1997 after a
Well,
whole
then I
bunch
agree
of,
with what you're reading.
yeah. And Boeing's management was engineer focused. McDonnell's Douglas management was focused on, literally termed, McDonnell Douglas's bean counters. So Boeing's engineers and McDonnell Douglas bean counters went head to head, and the latter won. And this was reported in 2020 in Quartz magazine. So, which they postulate is the leading to the crashes that Boeing, the problems that Boeing's been having. is because, now I didn't know any of this until today. I didn't read this, but the conversation, he said for 25 years, he watched Boeing's culture shift from quality to the bottom line, high profits. And he said, and from that, he said, we got to where we didn't trust Boeing parts.
Wow.
We didn't trust Boeing anymore. He said before, prior to that, you got a part from Boeing or you got an aircraft from Boeing, you didn't think anything about it. You put it on or you fired it up and flew it. And that was that. He said, after that, it became, oh, you don't trust Boeing because the Boeing's culture has shifted from quality to financial gain.
Hmm.
And then I read this today, the merger with McDonnell Douglas in 97. And it literally states that Boeing's engineers and the McDonnell Douglas's bean counters. So the engineers in Boeing that had worked their way up to management went head to head with the bean counters of McDonnell Douglas after the merger. And the financial aspect of making a big profit won and pushed quality to the side. So I think that's a true root cause analysis of what's going on with Boeing.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's with a guy with 45 years, and I'm not going to say his name, I know personally, but because he still is around within the industry itself, so I need to keep him.
Well, considering protected. That the last guy who went public with stuff like against Boeing turned up.
Didn't he get sucked into a jet engine or something?
No, they find him in a parking lot.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
apparent one of those suicide.
Magic. Yeah, alleged suicide. Yeah, a lot of those going around. Just, anyway,
yeah, who knows?
Yeah,
but so, no, anyway, that makes a lot of sense because it would be the financial side of things, and it does seem like it's not a big stretch to get to that point when you think about the stuff in the last 10 years, certainly in the last four since the pandemic. There's a whole epidemic going on right now of crappy used cars that were made during the pandemic that were made cheaper, more poorly because people were, you know, some were working, some were not, in and out. That if you're smart, you do not buy a used car made after, say, beginning in
2020, probably after 2020, because
2020, 2021, 2022.
Mm-hmm.
I would avoid those used cars forever. But it makes perfect sense the same way.
No, it does.
That quality would go down in the cost saving measure. More so than anybody else.
Yeah, not surprising. What's a little frustrating is, you know, I get making money. I mean, you're a for-profit company. Shoot, you and I both own companies. We're out here to make money. It's not a charity.
Yeah.
We're not an NGO that the government is giving us money that we don't have to work for. We are actually
opposed
to that. No, I would not be opposed to Uncle Biden, you know, in one of his more lucid states, handing my company a $5 or $6 million contract that I would be perfectly happy for to do.
The dude lost his uncle to cannibals.
Well, you know, we all have
I'm sorry, that's still traumas. The best story.
Yeah, we all have childhood traumas. Get in line, get over it. You know what? Get off your cross, use the wood to build a bridge and get over it. Anyway, we work for real companies, we're for profit. But if you're making a product that flies in the air, for me, having flown in a lot of aircraft in my time when I was in the Marine Corps, I was really confident that aircraft was a quality built aircraft. And plus I knew that the Marines who were maintaining it took pride in their work.
Yeah.
They didn't want the aircraft to go down, but to push profit over quality, which is basically Boeing is pushing profit over the lives of people. That's a crime unto itself, in Steve's opinion. So I won't fly because I'm sure Boeing's not the only one that's putting profit over quality.
Well, here's an interesting question that just dawned on me based on that.
Okay.
What does Boeing make for the military?
You know what?
But I'm looking now. In November 2022, Boeing consolidated its defense, space, and security business from 8 divisions into 4. Vertical Lift, the world's largest provider of military rotorcraft with a diverse portfolio of cargo, tilt rotor, and attack platforms.
Mobility. That would be the Osprey.
The Osprey. That's a winner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if, specifically if it's... Oh, no. Here, look. There's a list. Bomber aircraft. Boeing YB-9. XB-15, the B-17 Flying Fortress. Well, that one, they're just keep refurbing from what? The 50s?
B-17 is from World War II.
Yeah, they keep using it. They will forever.
No, you're talking about the B-52.
No, B-17 Flying Fortress.
Yeah, that's a World War II aircraft.
Yeah, it's still in their products created list.
The Boeing B-17... which is what made Boeing. Yeah, that was the Flying Fortress, as they called it. It was a fantastic aircraft. They don't make them anymore. But
They might be making parts for them then, because they're still on this list.
They may be making parts, yeah.
The B-47, the B-50.
You're still talking old stuff.
B-52, rotorcraft.
B-52 is still flying. Yeah.
The Apache is on their list, a rotorcraft.
Yep. Yeah, Apache Chinook. Is attack helicopter. Chinook,
that's Osprey, in conjunction with Bell.
The Widowmaker, as we call the Osprey.
I'm looking at the Comanche, which never got as popular as the Apache.
It did not.
Media and stuff.
Yeah.
Attack craft, F-2B, I'm looking to see anything that stands out. F-15,
The Hornet, the F-18 Hornet is there.
Hornet, F-18, F-22. Mm-hmm. I wonder, speaking of F-22, go back into the archives of this show, how much of this was the roaming F-22? Remember a couple months back, it went loose and was just roaming the countryside after the pilot ejected?
Was that the F-22?
Yeah.
No, which one was that?
Was that the F-35?
The F-35. It was the F-35, the newest one. The billion-dollar baby or whatever it is, whatever it costs.
Tankers and transports, C-22, C-32, C-127, 135. Yeah. So I'm wondering how much of this is also spilling over into that.
Well,
what you're talking about.
I think if you're flying a Boeing, you're flying a very profitable aircraft for them.
Oh, Boeing can go eat a bag of horse crap, Steve provided. Yeah. Boeing Launch Services, on the list of things that they have of things that Boeing built, it literally just says International Space Station.
Oh.
they were part of it. It's like saying Space Shuttle Orbiter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how would you like to be on the ISS and look down and see a Boeing name, part there and everything? It starts, the rivets are falling out of it or something.
Well, the only saving grace is that if Boeing that built the space shuttle was, or the space shuttle and the International Space Station is the good Boeing.
Prior to 1997, then.
Yeah. Geez, the space station's been up there for 35 forever. Years.
Yeah.
Something like that. I will leave our Boeing discussion with a clip from the music video from Reason does little music parodies. They do them with the magazine Reason.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know them.
Don't you think there might one day be consequences to this?
None that I can foresee.
Our passengers, unlike our fuselage, will be screwed under this plan.
That was good.
I'll send you the link for the whole video.
That's fine. I'm going to watch that one. Good one. All right.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's
an interesting thing you came across there, Steve.
Yeah. So, for that is not slanted one way or the other. You can make your own decision. Do you want to fly in an aircraft that has quality parts or one who has the most profitable for the manufacturer? Your choice. I go with quality.
So Aerobus.
Yeah, I'll jump right on that.
Well, see, that's the problem with this whole industry is there's only two competitors. There's only two of them. It's Europe decided to back Eurobus, and the United States is bankrolling Boeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And no one else can get into it because you're competing against the dollar of the United States government getting dumped on Boeing every single time.
Yeah. That they did.
Give it to anybody else, and they'd do something different with it. Or I don't know. Have
and I'm
them
sure
compete.
If you checked all the senators and the congressmen and women out there and looked at who their big donators are, I'm sure Boeing is a significant one to them.
How many places does Boeing have a little manufacturing thing or whatever?
Yeah. Kind of like Pfizer. Kind of like everywhere.
Yeah.
They got everybody in their pocket. Anyway, so if either one of us end up dead due to apparent suicides, neither one of us are suicidal. We just spoke out against Boeing and Pfizer. So anyway.
Well, not new for me in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't have to worry about it. I'm not flying anyway.
Nope, I don't fly. And I don't go around jet engines either to accidentally get sucked up to the intake. That seems
we're
to happen
keep
to people
on that train, are we?
Yeah, that seems to happen to people who speak out against things, you know. Hey, I got sucked into the engine intake, you know. Anyway, so you're a Pfizer.
Oh, Lordy. Okay, so I've been watching this for a couple weeks now. Mm-hmm. Let's take it down in almost reverse chronological order just to show hypocrisy. So over the weekend...
We are talking about the U.S. government here.
Oh, well, yeah. I thought that was given.
Okay. Well, we just... To clarify for people who may have just joined the podcast and didn't realize...
For
what
those who just
about.
Fast-forwarded to 27 minutes
yeah.
in.
Yeah. Didn't feel like listening to Steve's bitching about Boeing or Steve... That wasn't really... I was just reporting.
Well, yeah.
You know, that actually was a report.
Yes, they actually had a report.
That was a true... Yeah, that wasn't opinionated. It was just a true report. Here's what's going on. You decide. That's called journalism. All right.
Yeah, let the Tribune know.
Okay, yeah.
Excuse me. So, if you noticed over the weekend, it probably, you know, how much you probably weren't paying that much attention to it. But
zero.
Bill passed with the components from the House and the Senate and was signed by the White House, by the president in the White House, enforcing and putting on a ban on TikTok. It had to be the ownership has to be divested from their parent company, ByteDance in China.
I did hear that.
Okay, and a whole lot of things. It's being used to manipulate Americans. It's being used to spy on personal information for the Chinese government.
Yeah, collecting information.
Yeah, collecting information that people wouldn't normally share with other people. Stuff like all this kind of stuff. So they have 120 days to divest themselves of TikTok and the parent company, split it up. The thing about it is they're never going to be able to do it because what makes it work isn't the software. It's the algorithms that hand you the information. And that's they have that locked down hard because that's the golden sauce that makes the stuff appear.
Yeah.
So... They keep going through this, and if what's going to happen is they're going to end up suing, and it probably there's a decent chance it's going to get overturned anyway on a constitutional ground. But even if it's not, they actually, in the article here, I'm just reading where did this originally come from? Let me make sure. This is a MSN reprint of an article. That they're saying people are just going to be able to get around it. They can't delete the apps from people's machines. You're just not going to, people are going to be able to use it. It just won't receive updates, security patches, bug fixes, that kind of stuff. So people are still going to be able to use it as long as you had it. They're not going to be able to stop the traffic. Even if they try to stop the traffic, you just change your location with a VPN.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy to do. On top of which, you have the issue that, so you have the president of the United States that signs this bill, and then a day or so later, his campaign comes out and says, no, we're still going to keep using the platform, though, for the campaign.
Well, yeah.
So that's even part of it.
You're surprised?
Yeah. No, I'm not surprised. I'm just saying. But what then is hysterical is that context of that story, given the not just approval, but expansion of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA. So this thing was set to die because it wasn't going to get renewed. The House actually did something and didn't, and we're holding it up, which is a miracle with how bad this House of Representatives is. Holy crap, are they horrible at getting stuff done and understanding things. But they go through and they pass the this FISA Act and extend it. The thing about it is, it actually expands it. Here's a quote from Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat from Oregon. Thousands and thousands of Americans be forced into spying for the government by this new bill and with no warrant or direct court oversight, said Ron Wyden, a member of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, forcing ordinary Americans and small businesses to conduct secret warrantless spying is what authoritarian countries do, not democracies. He was leading along with Cynthia Lummis of Wyoming, Republican, led a bipartisan group of senators who submitted an amendment to reverse the expansion of warrantless surveillance under Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. What did that mean? The bill outlines what a service provider is. So what type of services could be used to, you know, collect communications. It has now been expanded to read as this. A service provider is any service provider who has access to equipment that is being or may be used to transmit or store wire or electronic communications. That's anything that connects to the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's anything.
It really is.
It doesn't even have to be related to communications, but it could potentially store. So if anything has any memory in it, your Roomba.
Your printer.
Anything, your smart fridge could now potentially fall under FISA, and the government can go to that company and say, give us those records. We don't need a warrant. Here's the FISA write-off.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, so if you irritate somebody in the government.
And remember, by the way, to put this in context, FISA violations were just a bit under 300,000 under the way the old setup was.
Over how many years?
Let me find out.
Yeah, that's curious. So there's only 300,000 violations or alleged violations.
I'm bringing up the Reuters article. It's one of these government reports. U.S. court found that FBI improperly searched for information in the U.S. database of foreign intelligence 278,000 times over several years.
Several years. It doesn't say how many years. No. Okay. So I'm willing to bet we're going to see a substantial increase in FISA use now. Yeah, they could technically ask for an external hard drive that you have then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's one, whatever size this thing that I have external, if I have attached to my computer is something they could technically say that we want to search that for information on it because I violated something,
well,
allegedly.
I think that might be a little different in the sense that you actually have a physical thing there
mm-hmm.
that is in your home.
Yeah, correct.
This would relate to data in the sense that, so if you had a offsite backup.
Oh, if I had a cloud or something.
Yes, a Dropbox, a Google Doc thing right. or something. Okay. They could go to those companies and say, give us all that data.
Yeah. Oh, so like all the appraisals that I back up offsite.
Yeah.
In case my hard drive crashes hard and I've got everything that I've done for the past 5 years.
Yeah.
That's great. Another reason to get off the internet. I'm thinking of using deleteme.com, start getting rid of stuff that way. I wonder if that's any good.
Not for the government. They're not gonna honor that. I'm looking here. The Brennan Center for Justice in New York University School of Law called the reauthorization the largest expansion of domestic surveillance authority since the inception of the Patriot Act.
And I didn't like the Patriot Act.
No, I didn't either. The bill, yeah. Anytime both parties are standing on the steps of the Capitol singing. Remember that after they passed the Patriot
yeah,
Act bill
uh-huh.
and they literally held hands and sang on, you know, some dirty stuff was going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody got backdoored
yeah.
hard.
The bill, yeah. which would effectively grant the federal government access to the communication equipment of almost any business in the United States, is a gift to any president who may wish to spy on political enemies, says Elizabeth Goldstein, senior director of the Brennan Center's Liberty and National Security Program.
So we've taken another step being like China now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the most surveilled and watched country in the world.
Who tells you that?
Who told us that?
Yeah. The ones who just passed this surveillance bill.
Yeah.
Do you believe it? I hate to say it that way, but.
But in general, just, you know, reading through stuff over the years and everything, and having spoken with a few Chinese nationals, they are very heavily, I'll use the term regulated
yes,
country it's, by it's, their it's, government. You know, cameras everywhere, tracking everything that they do, facial recognition everywhere. Of course, London's no better.
London's
England.
No better.
Good
in the United
God.
States.
And we're getting worse.
I know somebody.
I give the finger every time I pull up to a stoplight and I see one of those cameras there. I just give them the bird.
I know somebody who literally got a ticket
mm-hmm.
because the police cruiser had a camera that's read his license plate and he realized that his registration was a couple days late.
Hmm.
All that is a money-making deal.
Yep.
And this isn't state police, by the way. This isn't like some big, it's one of the little township or boroughs around here.
Oh,
they were stuck
no
in.
No kidding.
That, yeah, it was
yeah.
not like,
yeah, it was
I was in Pittsburgh and they got
or,
me,
yeah,
or the
yeah.
state PSP got me.
It was
yeah.
Backwater, Barney Fife.
Barney Fife. I was just going to say Barney yeah. Fife. Yeah. The nonprofit, this is still the Ars Technica article.
Okay.
The nonprofit Electronic Frontier Foundation, great, by the way. If anyone ever needs something to support, there's a good one. And I'm not being sarcastic about that. I know everything I say sounds sarcastic, but the EFF is really good. Argues that the National Security Agency's warrantless collection of Americans' communication is an intended and inherent part of the system. The intelligence community calls this incidental collection to downplay the fact that it routinely uses broad and invasive foreign intelligence surveillance authority to collect Americans' communication that should require a warrant. They just put a good marketing name on it.
Mm-hmm.
Incidental.
Hmm.
It's like getting blown up in a police raid or something, and you're just called collateral damage.
Yeah.
No, oops. My arm's over there.
Yeah. And you're at Amazon Prime, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, the streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you ever watched the series called Person of Interest? It was from 2011 to 2016.
No, I'm familiar with the concept. I never actually had a chance to sit down and actually watch it.
Well written, very worth watching. And what it is ex-CIA agent and a wealthy programmer save lives via surveillance using artificial intelligence that sends them identities of civilians involved in impending crimes. However, the programmer, the wealthy programmer, is the guy who, after 9/11, developed secretly a surveillance system that was sold to the government for $1 that surveys everything looking for potential terrorist threats.
Yeah.
But since the system looks at everything and analyzes everybody and everything, that people that aren't of, you know, are of inconsequential, even though they're going to be a victim of a crime or being a victim of a crime, because it's not a terrorist thing, they're just kind of pushed off to the side. So this, these guys, you know, help them type of people. But it's interesting. If you, it's worth watching. Where I think we're on season two now, but it goes to exactly what we're just talking about now. And I've watched it, and I'm not a big conspiracy theorist type guy. You know, I don't get into, you know, wearing a tinfoil hat and all that and everything, but I've watched this enough. And with the technology that we have, I think it's very plausible what they're, what this, this whole per, it's called person of interest.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, very, very worth, good, worth watching, worthwhile. Good acting too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But no, this, this whole thing, I have to add that to the list. This whole thing is just insane that in one hand, they effectively, in the cover of darkness on a weekend, move through one bill to expand the search powers and collection information of the United States government. And then a week later, ban an app for the same thing.
Yeah, but isn't that the only time Congress actually does anything under the cover at night when nobody's paying attention?
Yeah.
And it benefits them? So, no, and I'm being very sarcastic here. Because I thought, in fact, here's a sidebar. Can you name me one thing that Congress has, a problem that Congress has solved? That affects us, the everyday Joe and Jane that walk around. And I did say everyday Joe and Jane.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I can't. I've thought about it. I've 60 plus years of walking around on this earth. I can't think of one thing that my lifetime that Congress has done, solved a problem that has personally affected me in a positive way. They've created a lot of problems, but solve one.
Yeah, well, they can't, because it's this whole thing that, that they need the problems to keep going. I Tuesday was primary day. Did you go vote?
Nope.
Did you have anyone, if you had gone to vote, would you have been able to vote for anybody?
Local?
Yeah.
I don't even know who ran, to be honest with you.
Because up here we didn't. I wasn't allowed to vote, being third party.
Mm-hmm.
71st District, no opposition primary or general election.
Hmm.
Senate District, no primary opposition, no general election opposition. It's done.
Mm-hmm. So who's got the 71st now?
That's Jim.
Okay, so he didn't. So nobody ran against.
No
him.
One against ran against Jim. And nobody ran no against, one against Wayne Langerhall. Yeah. The 72nd, only one Republican ran on that ticket.
Isn't that
Amy Bradley from the chamber?
Oh, Amy Bradley.
And the incumbent on the Democratic side was the incumbent, Frank Burns, our favorite author, Frank Burns.
Frank Burns is good people.
That's it. So there was nobody. Like, presidential race was done. Trump won, locked that one up already.
Yeah, wasn't even worth me going out and striking it. That'd have been the only one I'd have pulled for.
Yeah, so you had nobody. You had nobody on that side of the house to deal with, to vote with. On top of which, then you also had, and I had this conversation with a friend of mine Tuesday into Wednesday, was the concept of, well, it should be more fair. The original argument that was posed, the idea was posed, was the it would be more fair to have them as open primaries. So if you're third party, if you everyone can vote in every election.
Mm-hmm.
And that's absolutely the wrong way to do it. The primaries are the internal vote by an organization, in this case a party, on who their nominee is going to be. You know, there was so much time put together and talked about with Nikki Haley getting so much support. And by people that they interviewed, oh, yeah, I'm Democrat, but I had open primary, so I just went over and voted for her to mess with, you know, fine. That, no, it's a closed system. That doesn't fix it. What fixes it is eliminating ballot access problems. I did the math. Let me find what I wrote.
Okay, so what do you mean by ballot I'm gonna access tell you. Problem? Oh, okay.
Because I did the breakdown of this, and let me find it. So in Pennsylvania, here we go. According to Ballotpedia, statewide race, the United States Senate race. So say you had a senator, a person that wanted to run as a Senate as an independent, or a third party that didn't have ballot access. Okay, so so you have to figure out what you got to do. Republican, Democrat. How many signatures do you think you need?
For presidential?
No, U.S. Senate. So Pennsylvania Senate. You want to run against Bob Casey this year.
Is it 20,000?
It's 5,000.
$5,200.
Okay, no big deal. If you're an independent or a third party not qualified, air quotes, for what they consider on the ballot, you need 2% of the highest statewide vote getter in the last statewide election. So I pulled up the Fetterman race from 2 years ago when he ran against, or last time, not 2 years, but whenever he ran against Oz. I guess that was 2 years ago now. Fetterman got, as the highest vote getter, 2.75 million votes in Pennsylvania.
So you need 2% of that?
You need 2% of that. 55,000 signatures.
As an independent.
And $200.
Why isn't it the same as a Republican or Democrat?
Because they don't want you playing in their sandbox.
Of course not. Right.
That's the problem, Steve. I don't want to as a third party. I don't want to vote in a primary that I'm not involved in. I'd be like, I'm going to tell you what you're going to have for supper tonight. That's up to you. But at the other hand, I still get to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Here, if you want to really fix this stuff, it has to be at the same level. So any person who can collect 5,000 signatures and $200 can get on the ballot.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. It should be the same.
Yeah. The parties can have their nomination process. They can have their own primary. They can have their own caucus. They can spin a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
They can list every Democrat who wants to run and get gets enough signatures to be on the ballot. Fine, no big deal. Put them on a wheel of Price is Right Showcase Showdown wheel and spin it. Mm-hmm. However, they decide to want to do it, but the barrier to access to ballots is so astronomically hard in some of these states. It's insanely stupid.
So the system's rigged against anything other
than Republican
or Democrat?
To make sure it's a D or an R. And that's it.
And once again, the all of the elected officials that I called out by name a couple of podcasts ago. I call you all out again and say you should resolve this. You want to talk about a level playing field? Level the playing field.
The problem is, I guarantee you, if you talk to any of them, probably any one of them, not even the ones you were talking about, but anyone in the state, aside for probably a handful I probably could name if I thought about it, they'd tell you quietly, yeah, you're probably right. I come out and say it, the party will just politically murder them. Oh,
politically will kill them, yeah. We'll
yeah, they'd them. Have a primary challenger that minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a rigged system.
So, actually, what I'm kind of thinking about, and I have to do the research, because I don't know if you can actually push ballot initiatives in Pennsylvania. I have to look and see if there's a process for that. Because as screwy as it is, like some of the greatest elections that I can remember in my time are those goofy ones in California where you had 35 or 40 people running and you get Arnold Schwarzenegger winning as governor, who won two terms.
Yes,
and by all standards, seemed to do fairly decent in California. Yeah. But you know what? That also gives the crazy person, because and you respect the crazy person a little bit, because it's not mainstream politics and party politics, because he might be talking about an issue that at least gets attention to it.
Very true.
But when you look at it, and I've been watching what Kennedy's going through to get on the ballot in some of these states.
It's miserable.
It's just miserable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no other way to describe it, just miserable.
But at the end of the day, they line up on these issues like FISA, like mm-hmm. ballot access, and say, hey, this is our party.
Mm-hmm.
You guys fight over this stuff. We're going to sit here and above all of you in the mud doing our thing.
Mm-hmm.
You said it. Yeah. You said it long ago in an article, politicians versus statesmen.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there are no statesmen left.
And honestly, I think that's probably the biggest thing when you talk about it that has upset so many people in D.C. for so long about Trump. He didn't hide the fact that this was going on.
Oh no! He pulled the blanket back and exposed him. You know. He told the emperor had no clothes.
Yeah.
Which upset everybody. Well, anyway. So what else you got? You feel
That's
better?
That's it. I'm better. Yes, I actually do feel better.
That's good.
I feel better. Well, as long as I don't get in a Boeing airplane, I think I'll be fine. No, it's just that I'm sorry. It just drives me nuts that that's the level of just...
Stupidity.
It reminds me back when there's a God. I've got another send you another Heaton video about them doing what should have happened at tech conferences.
You didn't send me the last one.
Oh, I forgot. What was the last one I was supposed to send? Oh, Buck Swarthmore. I can do that too. I'll send you a list of stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
It's been a busy 2 weeks, man.
I know. Yeah, that's why I didn't say anything. You brought it up. Not me.
I know. It's fine. But the idea that you know they're harassing tech leaders. Congress in one hearing harassing tech leaders about, boy, oh my goodness, Apple and Amazon and Facebook have unchecked power. And it's like, none of you congressmen are having any type of reflection at all complaining about an organization having unchecked power.
Right. Yeah. Really? You just said that with a straight face?
At all.
Just right over top of the head. Yeah. No idea. No idea where that one impacted.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
What's the old thing? Don't steal. The government hates the competition.
That's right. Don't print your own money. Government doesn't like competition. Well, Matt.
All right. I'm vented. I feel better.
Yep. And I'm not flying on Boeing aircraft. Actually, I'm not flying on any aircraft.
I'm not flying
unless anywhere. I fixed it personally. Anyway.
I don't like flying from the standpoint of I need to have control of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm very, I understand that they say it's safer and statistically I understand it, but at the same time, I think I'd feel better if something happens, me being at the wheel of my car versus me sitting in the passenger in J13 waiting for
impact. No leg room. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It's like, no, I got this. I have flown Microsoft Flight Simulator. I am golden.
Yeah. I've got 2,000 hours for Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Steve, what do you need? No big deal. So I'm ready to go. Defend the country. You know what's Call of Duty I've played? Let's.
Yeah, I got it. Not a problem. I can tuck and roll with the best of them. All right, Matt. Well,
thank you, Steve.
Yeah, have a great day.
You too.